columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Stoke, a household name, says he has, quote, big time concerns about rookies being ready to play. And it's Mike Tomlin. Big time concerns about the, quote, development and readiness of rookies, which is why he said the team will be, quote, turning over every stone, end quote, to help get NFL newcomers ready. He said, quote, the ability to contribute, their ability to gain significant roles and to maintain those significant roles are going to be challenging in these circumstances, more challenging than normal. And I think throughout the course of this journey, we're all going to realize how significant or maybe insignificant that is. I'm working my tail off with the Pittsburgh Steelers rookies to make it as insignificant as possible, end quote.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, it's going to be difficult. I mean, make no mistake about it. That's just what it is for these young guys coming in and the adjustment that they have to make and all the things that they usually go through before a regular rookie season for these guys. And most of them still struggle, right? It's still very, very difficult for these guys to come in and make a big immediate impact. And now you look at the situation of not having any of this stuff available to them when it comes to getting out there and practicing and getting reps under your belt. It's going to make it even more difficult for these guys to make any kind of impact this year, just the way it is right now. And it kind of is what it is. You have to adapt and overcome and try to make the best of it and figure it out to try to get some of these guys up to speed, because a lot of football teams have to count on some young football players. You see injuries, you see things that happen, and the ones that can get them up to speed and get them ready to go, and maybe you have to make the playbook a little simpler. Do some things differently maybe than a normal offseason to help get these guys up to speed. But that's just the way it's got to be this year.
Yeah, and, you know, it reminded me of the conversation we had yesterday with Bill Polian, you know, talking about, you know, comparing what this offseason might look like to how offseasons of the past have looked like and what the level of expectation could be or should be. This is Bill Polian from yesterday.
Keep in mind that you probably weren't even alive when this happened, Stoke, but back in the good old days, players would leave the facility in late December, and even the playoff teams and the Super Bowl, you know, was only like played the second week in January. So even the teams that made the Super Bowl left in January and came back for 1 3-day mini camp, usually at the end of May, usually right around this time. And then left again and went back to their off-season jobs. The minicamp was on a weekend. They went back to their off-season jobs and reported back to training camp. Usually, in those days, we had six-week training camp, so it was usually mid-July. And what they gained in training camp was 2 extra weeks of conditioning. It wasn't really until the 1990s and 1993, to be specific, that OTAs came into play. And off-season programs didn't develop really in full until the late 80s.
Well, we're a long way from that. I mean, I understand why he went there, but, like, you know, back in the day, it's these guys are hanging out, maybe working another job, show up for 3 days. 3 days! Go back home, go back to your life, and then come back for training camp. Well, that hasn't been this way for quite some time. These guys are typically right now, you know, out on the field and, you know, getting to their markers and building continuity from a physical standpoint, you know, getting up to speed. And, you know, this offseason, although they're communicating with Zoom and stuff like that, it maybe is a little bit of a throwback in terms of time spent with the team during the offseason.
But the problem here is, you know, when you know, Mr. Polian is talking about what he's talking about, like he said, training camp was 6 weeks long. And so once you got to training camp, it was a grind. You know, they put a lot of work into training camp. Now training camp, you know, they don't even have two-a-days. Right? So, you know, to try to play catch-up is even more difficult because of the shortened practices, the lack of putting pads on. So, obviously, when you're not going through anything in the offseason and having any kind of football-related drills together, and all of a sudden you're in training camp and, you know, it seems like a week and a half, 2 weeks, you're playing your first game. Look, I mean, you got to worry about injuries. You got to – I mean, all this stuff has to come into the equation of how you how safely you take these guys in slowly. You know, do you try to get these guys up to speed, because you just don't want to throw them out there and but you have a lot of work to do also. So there's a fine line here. It's going to be interesting to see how teams navigate this and try to get these young guys obviously up to speed, but at the same time you don't want to throw too much at them. You don't want to, you know, put too much on their plate and overdo it, and next thing you know you get somebody hurt. Or, you got too much in the playbook and they can't comprehend it, and then their whole rookie season's lost. So it's a tough situation, you know, for coaches, because that's the stuff that the coaches are thinking about right now. How do we handle training camp if we don't have any kind of off-season at all? How do we navigate these rookies? Like you said, Mike Tomlin. I mean, how do I get them the information and get them to understand it? Because teams need these young players to play. And to not only play, but have an impact and play well. But how do you do that with everything that's going on? And that's the things that, like Mike Tomlin said, they're trying to figure out. But it's not anything that you can go back and there's a handbook for it.
This is more of Bill Polian talking about, hey, should the expectations for this, you know, loaded up firepower offense be the same considering the situation that they're in?
No, that doesn't work. Not with the change that is being put on this offense. That's too much to take that approach. I think what you should be looking for, let's start with the quarterback. Are we seeing the kind of growth and development in him that would make you think that he can take it to the promised land at some time in the future? Do you see the growth and development of the receivers working together and you know, meshing with him and meshing with the offense? How is the offensive line doing? There are people that would make an argument that any offensive line would be better than what you've had in the past. So that's not a high bar right, by any measure. So bottom line is, who's left? The running game should be pretty good. I think it'll be pretty good, and Pat will emphasize it. And then you look for the quarterback and the receivers to grow together. And by the time we hit week 12, if we have a full season, the measurement should start from week 12 on.
Very interesting. The measurement should start from week 12 and on. So after training camp, after three quarters of the season, that's when you should start fairly evaluating these guys. And earlier in the response, Stokes said it's not necessarily like about like wins and losses. This is about growth and development for the quarterback.
That's right. And that's what we're looking at. And obviously, this offseason stuff that we've been talking about is not going to help him in this situation. So I like how Bill Polian framed it. What does those last 4 weeks look like? Where is he at then? Let's not rush to judgment early on if he's struggling or this thing's not looking like it did last year. Let's just let this whole thing play out this year and take everything in consideration and then come up with, you know, whether Drew Locke has a chance to be the guy or not. Now, obviously, we're going to be paying a close attention every single week, but I think, you know, there at the end of the season, are we seeing a better Drew Locke than we saw, obviously, at the beginning of the season? Just things like that is more important than, say, wins and losses or yards that he threw for in week 3 or week 5 and touchdowns and interceptions. Let's take a look at the whole book here, not just the first couple chapters, and try to come to a conclusion on who he's going to be.
I like that. And we have to remind ourselves of that throughout the season.
Sure, because we're going to react every game. right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
And we're going to be critical, but overall, I think we want to see just improvement, and we want to see a guy that grasps the terminology and the playbook, and he looks more comfortable in Week 12 than he did in Week 2, and he's playing his best football there. So I think that's the most important thing here when you're looking at him and his development, and whether we can say we feel good about him moving on to 2021, or you know, we got to open this thing back up, Zach. So I got to give him a quick shout out to my man Carson, my 14 year old today.
Oh, happy birthday!
He turned 14 today, so it's all about him. He's out getting his icy, getting his Burger King. He's getting McDonald's later. All his friends came by in the car parade, and so big shout out to them for doing that for him.
That's awesome.
Really, really cool. He's had a great morning, and so give him a shout out. And yes, hopefully they're in the car bringing me some lunch because I'm hungry.
That is great. I love it. Happy birthday to Carson. All right, it's time, and maybe Stoke, maybe it's time to pass down that 14 chain.
Oh, you think so, huh?
It might be time.
Let him get blinged out. Well, he's 14 years old.
That's what I'm saying.
So wear the 14 when he's 14?
That's what I'm saying. Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know if he's ready for that bling.
Okay. Oh, man. It's time to step back inside the fan film room. Justin Sternad. Just who is that guy? Stoke and I both watched the tape. Tell you what we saw next. All right, Stoke, we fired up the old tape and looked at the Broncos' fifth-round pick, Justin Sternad. He was taken 178th overall, the 6'3", 238-pound linebacker out of Wake Forest. What did you make of his game? We went back and looked at it. It was early in the season. I think it was the fourth game of the year, I want to say. It was Wake Forest against the University of North Carolina.
You know, I like his athleticism. That's what stands out is he moves really, really well. He can play out in space, right, which you need these types of linebackers, type of hybrid linebacker, hybrid safety type of guys, and that's what he profiles as, a guy that can play out in space. You can walk him out over a tight end that's flexed out or a slot receiver that's flexed out, and you still have a big enough body to be able to play against the run. So, you know, you got the athleticism, the cover out in space, but you can still man up there and go in the box and make some tackles and not get bullied around. So that's the type of player this guy is. You know, he's not the biggest guy, but he has that knack. And some guys just have a knack, you know, whether they can just finagle their body and they're flexible enough just to get under these big linemen, you know, these big, stiff linemen that aren't very athletic, Orlando, Mark Slareth, those types of guys. These guys can just bend around them. That's what he does a really good job of. He does really good with that. And some guys just have that ability to get around these guys. Now, if they get their hands on him, it's you know, it's night-night for him, right? I mean, he'll get bullied out of the way.
Yeah.
But he does a really good job of getting around these guys and not letting the big offensive linemen get their hands on him. He does a good job of diagnosing plays. You can tell he's a very smart football player.
Yes.
You know, whether it's run or pass, you see in the game where, you know, he recognizes it right away and he's dropping back into coverage and the linebacker that's next to him is biting up on the play fake. So you can just see he's a smart football player, studies film, has some keys and some, things that he recognizes to help him, but he does a really good job of diagnosing plays early on and figuring out where they're going with the football. Runs really well and an athletic linebacker. And when did they take him?
They took him in the fifth round.
Yeah, I really like this guy. And I think what this guy was, he got banged up last year, or he probably would have been a third-round pick or so.
Yeah.
He had surgery. I really like this pick. I think he's going to profile as a really good NFL football player. And on top of that, he'll be a really good special teams player. He'll be one of the best special teams players that the Broncos have. And I think he ends up being a really good contributor. Maybe not this year, obviously. Going to be tough for these young guys to come in, but down the line I think this guy is going to really help this defense out.
I love everything you just said there. Justin Sternad was a fun watch because he is active. I mean, especially in this game against University of North Carolina, he was everywhere. I mean, he really was. He was sacking the quarterback, he broke up a pass, he had 15 tackles in one game. That was the most tackles for one player in any ACC game this year.
Wow.
Justin Sternod is a really intriguing prospect. Love what you said about special teams, by the way. Love what you said about because it's a quick reaction type of thing, and he's got a great a combination of speed and athleticism to make plays on special team while also diagnosing in, you know, a split second. And you saw some of that, and you just went over it. But I mean, 15 different times to be, you know, right around the ball, involved in the tackle, and then also getting to the quarterback, and on that play in particular, when he sacked, what's his name? Sam Howell. It almost looked like he was like a spy on the play a little bit. But I don't know if he was just actually waiting for the run, realizing it's a pass, but he ran from, you're talking about sideline to sideline. He ran from the, his right side of the offensive line where he was initially lined up and made the sack all the way near the left sideline of the field. And I just love to see it. And, you know, Mel Kiper said that if he was asked about a steal in the fifth round and he was given the whole slate of players picked in that fifth round in the draft a couple weeks ago, and he put Justin Sternod as his number one gem in the fifth round.
I love it. I love it. And in this game, this guy was really good. I don't know how many games he played before he got hurt this year, but eight games.
Yeah.
You know, health obviously is always concerned if you don't finish out a season. Can he stay healthy? Can he hold up? Is he durable enough to hold up in the NFL playing that type of undersized position? But if he can, he's going to make the team. He's going to be a contributor, and he could be a contributor right away, especially on special teams. So I like this pick. I think this guy's got potential to, you know, fill that kind of void that you're looking for in your defense. A guy that's, you know, you look at Will Parks. I think he was underrated here, and the things that he could do. And,
agreed.
And just a solid football player. Not an all-pro, but just a solid football player. And this guy's a little bit bigger than Will Parks, but he kind of fits that type of role. He'll be able to do a little bit of everything, and he'll be a good special teams player for you. And I like this pick, and especially where they got this guy and his athleticism and what he could bring to this defense. I give two thumbs up on Justin Sternad.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And by the way, to your comment about special teams, which I think is spot on, his sophomore year, he didn't start a game for Wake Forest. He led the team in special teams tackles. So
that's awesome.
Yep. It's something to keep an eye on. But you know the old recruiting story that the coach is there to see one player, then another player pops for him.
Sure.
That happens so often. Now I'm watching this tape on Justin Sternod, but this young man Nasir Greer, I'll tell you, he was fun to watch. And I don't know. I have no idea what his NFL prospects look like. He's a 6 foot, 200-pound sophomore. But this dude was flying around the field. He was so fun to watch. He played with such great energy and had a great motor. Again, don't know about NFL prospects, but if you get a chance to watch Wake Forest this coming college football season, he's going to be a junior. This young fella, Nasir Greer, keep an eye on him. I don't know if how much of the tape you did get to watch because it was the whole game, the copy that we were given. But he was fun. He was fun. All right. I got to read.
I'll keep my eye out for him this year. Nasir Greer.
Yeah. He was
okay.
He was fun. He was fun.
All right.
Speaking of college, we had Chad Brown on earlier today, the CU Buff great, and someone chimes in on the RamosLaw.com text line. I'm so tired of CU guys saying that they, quote, won a national championship. They shared it with Georgia Tech. CU hacks. They were never champs. And I live in Boulder County.
Wow.
Oh, gee. Wow.
So you still won it, even though you shared it, right? That is extreme.
Thank you. He said, none of you guys ever acknowledged that there was another national champ that year. That doesn't make CU not national champions. That's just the way they did it then. It's not like no one won the national title. They're co-champs.
Should be no co-champs, though.
I know.
Like, okay, we're co-champs. All right, we're squaring up. Let's go.
Right.
Let's go. Next week, we're going to settle this thing on the football field. And it's just the way it should have been.
I can't believe they did it that way
back
in the day. Like all the, you know.
We tied. Yeah. You don't have a tie. You don't have a tie for the championship. Play it out.
Right?
You can't tie?
Right.
I don't get it. Was one like AP and one was coaches or something ridiculous? Is that how it was?
It's goofy. Yeah, it's like the coaches.
They had two different polls.
The coaches poll and the AP poll and your champs that way. thank goodness we got away from that. And and we had to go through the BCS system there for a little bit. Remember that little hectic era? I love the place that college football is at right now. But
just too many games. They play too many games.
Like in the regular season?
I mean, because then you're playing 12, you got conference championship games, you got guys, they play 14, 15, 16 games, it seems like. It's just too many games.
Yeah, I agree. I can't disagree. It's come a long way. I mean, in that regard, where it used to be, what were they used to play?
12 at the most. 12 right? at the most. You know, we played 11, and you go to a bowl game, and that's it, 12, bam.
But now these guys, it feels like the 12th game is the conference championship game. Then you can get to the college football playoff or a bowl. And if you're in the college football playoff, you could have two more games. You're playing, 14,
16 games. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's like almost an NFL schedule. A lot of money to be made, though.
That's it.
That's for sure.
That's what it is.
Gridiron Greats, powered by Siltahar Motors, Saturday at 2. It's Super Bowl 43 between Arizona and Pittsburgh. Gosh, I remember that like it was yesterday. I remember Larry Fitzgerald streaking down the middle of the field during that game. Yeah. And then Sunday at 11, it was Santonio Holmes finished that one off, right? Right in the corner.
What a catch that was.
And you taught him that toe tap, didn't you?
I did.
I heard that. Yeah, I heard that somewhere.
I did.
Saturday
morning. I don't like to take credit for it, but since you brought it up. Yeah.
So that's Saturday. Then Sunday morning at 11, it's Brett Favre and Minnesota take on Drew Brees and New Orleans. Gosh, I remember that too. And then Monday is Memorial Day, and we have something special lined up. Super Bowl 32 marathon all day long, including insight and reaction from the fan hosts. You're not going to want to miss that. So if you're bebopping around on Monday, or even if you're home grilling up, you're out there with a cold pop by the grill, fire it up. And by the way, my wife tells me now when I go out and cook on the grill, I don't know if I told you this, I'm hiding because like the steak will need to be like flipped like once, but right. I'll stay out there for like 18 minutes.
Right.
With the door sealed, my one-year-old's in there flying around. She goes, you're hiding.
Ooh.
When you go take a shower, you're hiding. I'm like,
I forgot about those days.
I love it. All right.
No, let's grill out again. No, I love grilling out. It's tough. It's tough. I got to be out there. I got to make sure I don't burn things.
Right. We're going to slow cook them today, too.
That's right.
Oh, I love it. All right. Pro Football Focus ranked each team's wide receiving core. Where did the Broncos end up? Very interesting. We'll take a dive into it next. Pro Football Focus. Our friends at PFF, they ranked each team's wide receiving core. Where did the Broncos end up? Very interesting conversation here. And, the last couple years that these rankings have been put out, the Broncos, at least for probably this past year and maybe even the year before, they've been in the back half of the league. Right. And at certain points, some people would have them in the bottom third, and rightfully so. It just hasn't been good enough. But this time around, the good folks at Pro Football Focus, they put their list out. Before I tell you where the Broncos were,
okay,
where do you think that they ended up?
Well, is that with our two draft picks?
Yes.
Okay, so that's kind of projecting. It's hard to do that for me right now. I don't know where we're going to look like, what they're going to look like this year. Obviously it's going to be tough. I like the potential, but for both those guys to come in and have a huge impact, it's going to be tough to do. So I got to take that into consideration.
Also take into consideration that the tight ends are a part of this as well.
Tight ends are a part of it also.
Yep.
Okay.
Just your pass catchers.
Oh, okay. Wow. I would put them in, how about... How'd I do? How'd I do,
Steven? Pretty good.
24.
Whoa! 24?
Yep.
With Jerry Jeudy and K.J. Hamler and Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant?
Well, I don't know what Jerry Jeudy and K.J. Hamler are going to be.
Okay.
Noah Fant had a good year. I mean, he wasn't an all-pro tight end. He wasn't a pro bowler. And we got Cortland Sutton. So, I'm just, kind of right now. I don't want to set the bar too high. So I
okay.
That's why I put him right there is because I haven't seen Judy and Hamler go out there and do it, and I'm taking in consideration the lack of the off season, and these guys are going to have some ups and downs this year. I'm not expecting them to hit the ground running and this to be a top, you know, 7-8 wide receiver / tight end group right now. Not this year.
All right. Well, Pro Football Focus, the number one receiving core in the league. And by the way, if I said that, who's the number one receiving core in the league?
Oh,
who
wow.
comes to mind? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, slightly. I'll probably forget about a group. But right away, I'll think about, you know, one of the best in the game, Michael Thomas. You pair him with Emmanuel Sanders. I think that's got to be up there. Dallas Cowboys probably got a really high group there with Amari Cooper,
yeah.
Gallup, and CeeDee Lamb adding to that group. I like that.
Those are according to PFF, two of the top four.
Okay.
Right there.
Chiefs.
The number
they
one.
Got to be up there.
And then you just named three of the top four.
Okay.
The one that you didn't name is number one on their list. This is not who I would have number one, but according to Pro Football Focus, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, wow.
With Chris Godwin and Mike Evans and Rob Gronkowski and O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate.
It's a good group.
It's a good group. Number two, they have the Kansas City Chiefs. We know that group all too well. Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman. Now they have my guy, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who is a terrific pass catcher out of the backfield.
But we're not counting him.
But he is a pass-catching weapon. Then you get to number three. Again, according to PFF, it's the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay.
It's the Dallas Cowboys, which I would have number one in the league, in my opinion. Yes.
I would put Amari Cooper and
Michael Gallup, I think.
I wouldn't put them ahead of Tampa Bay.
No?
Because you got to consider the tight ends, too. Who does Dallas have for a tight end? I think that hurts them. Now, the top three are great, but Godwin and Mike Evans, I mean, woo.
You know, Godwin.
With Gronk?
I don't know what I'm going to get from Gronk. O.J. Howard's been, you know, largely disappointing.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, and reasonable minds can disagree on this.
Yeah, they're all really good, right? I mean,
they're all really good.
They're both great.
Yep. And then we get to number four, and you hit this one on the head, New Orleans.
Jared Cook.
Yeah. And of course, Emmanuel. I cannot wait to see what Emmanuel does in this offense. If he stays healthy, I can't see him being less than 850, 900 yards.
Oh, he'll get 1,000. If he stays, if he plays 16 games, no doubt about it, he'll get 1,000.
Phew, you know, I'm...
Put it in the books.
Yeah, all right.
I'm going to make my prediction on... What's the date?
May 22nd.
May 22nd. I'm going to make my prediction on May 22nd. Emmanuel Sanders plays in 16 games, he's getting over 1,000 yards.
All right. I love it. I don't think you're talking crazy. Then rounding out the top five receiving cores in the league. This one's interesting. The Buffalo Bills with Stephon Diggs, John Brown, who's a lid lifter, Cole Beasley there working the slot, and then this young man that they drafted, Dawson Knox, who had a really nice rookie season at the tight end spot. They're a formidable group as well.
Absolutely. That's a good trio there, and got another young tight end, like you said, Knox there, and Josh Allen throwing it around to him. So, and when you have a quarterback that can extend plays with his legs like that, it only helps that group out. But they complement each other really, really nicely there.
Then we get to number six, according to Pro Football Focus, receiving core, pass catchers.
Yeah,
tight ends included. We get to the Detroit Lions, number six. That duo of Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones Jr.
Yep.
Certainly formidable. And then Danny Amendola remains a solid option there, even into his early to mid 30s. And they also have the highly touted T.J. Hockenson, who they took in the top 10 from a year ago. It's coming off an injury. So that's number six. And then you get to number seven here. You get to the Chargers. Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Hunter Henry. You know, you can throw in Austin Eckler in terms of a pass catcher, although he's listed as a running back.
Good group.
Yep. We get to number eight. It's the Carolina Panthers. who,
Moore.
You know, yeah, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel there, and then they signed Robbie Anderson.
Okay.
So they're in that conversation there, and then you got to include Christian in terms of pass catching as well. He's a part of that mix as well. And then we get to the last two spots in the top 10. We get to the last two spots in the top 10 receiving core in the league. Are the Broncos inside of the top 10? I'll tell you next.
Tuck it, walk it, walk it like I tuck it. Walk it like I tuck it. Woo. Walk it like I tuck it. You. Walk it like I tuck it. Walk it like I tuck it. Walk it like I tuck it. Woo. Walk it like I tuck it.
Hey.
Walk it like I tuck it. Walk it.
Troy Rank, good friend of this show, drops by on a Friday. And Troy, we were just counting down the pro football focus. They went out and ranked the top receiving cores in the NFL, 1 through 32, and not just wide receivers, but all types of pass catchers were involved in this. And we just got 1 through 8, and just to catch our audience up, if you're just joining us, number 1, according to PFF, Tampa Bay Bucks. Number 2, the Kansas City Chiefs. Number 3, the Dallas Cowboys. The Saints come in at number 4. The Buffalo Bills round out the top 5. Then you get to Detroit, you get to the Chargers, and then you get to the Panthers at 8. That's where we left off. Number 9 on this list, according to Pro Football Focus, is the Cleveland Browns. You think of Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, Austin Hooper is a part of that mix now, I believe, and David Njoku, their first-round pick out of Miami from a couple years ago, still there. So they come in at number 9, and then we get to number 10. Going to the break, I said, are the Broncos, could they possibly be in the top 10? Stoke, you thought they could be at 24. They come in at number 10, the wow. Denver Broncos. And what is said next to their name is the Broncos really revamped their offense in the 2020 NFL draft, and it should serve them well heading into next season. Cortland Sutton emerged as a legitimate primary option outside last season, moving past the drop issues that plagued him as a rookie and ending the 2019 season with an 83 overall grade that ranked 10th. At the wide receiver position. Interesting. His new running mate, Jerry Jeudy, excels as a route runner, and his ability to create separation was unmatched in this class, which is precisely why he entered the draft as Pro Football Focus's wide receiver number 1. With those two outside and the speed over the middle of the field with KJ Hamler, Noah Fant, and Albert Okwuegbunam, the Broncos have handed Drew Lock a golden opportunity to prove that he belongs. Troy, before we get to you, I'm curious to get a Stokes reaction really quick first that the Broncos, according to PFF, have a top 10 receiving unit in the National Football League.
Well, I mean, they're projecting a lot there. You know, when you talk about three rookies that you're talking about in that equation, Albert Okwuegbunam, Jeudy, and Hamler, man, I can't do that right now. Not with this offseason. I'm high on them all. I love them. But that's going a long way their rookie year to expect those guys to come in and have that type of impact for this group to be a top 10 group, be ranked 10th. I just can't go there. I think eventually it's got a chance to be a special group. But early on in this year, I think we're going to see a lot of ups and a lot of downs from this group because of the lack of this offseason and just their youth.
Troy, what do you make of it?
Well, I think 10's probably a little ambitious just because you're banking so largely, as Stokes said, on two rookies delivering in Jeudy and Hamler. Jeudy will deliver, and I'm not sure exactly what that looks like. For me, it's 800 yards, 4 to 6 touchdowns, and then the next year he's a Pro Bowler, but you're banking largely on that. If you want to go top 10 and make an argument for me, the argument would be Melvin Gordon. He's averaged 50 catches a year the last 3 years. He is a legitimate threat and reliable weapon out of the backfield as a receiver. It's proven. So if you throw him in the mix as a guy who's done it, you know, again, in a different team, different offense, then that's when I'd say for sure they're top 15. For to be 10, you're largely saying Hamler's going to be a bigger factor than maybe I think he can his rookie year, and that Melvin Gordon would have to be, you know, 40 to 50 catches clearly for them to be a top 10. But there's no doubt they're better. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, they've gone from, you know, dial-up connection to wireless this off-season. I mean, they have a chance now
They went into games last year with no chance to score points at any type of rate. So it's exciting that they have weapons that are being regarded this way.
Troy, yeah. Rank. Go ahead, Stoke.
No, I was just, you know, Troy, you know, we had Chad Brown on earlier today, and I was asking him about his expectations for Drew Lock. We're talking about this receiving group, and obviously it's much upgraded. There's no doubt about that. And big point of emphasis this offseason was to upgrade the weapons around Drew Lock. But given the circumstances here, what should the realistic expectations be for Drew Lock this year? What are you looking for from him?
Yeah, I mean, again, everyone knows I'm bullish on Drew Lock for the reasons, you know, behind the scenes in the work he puts in and the way he understands what it means to be an NFL quarterback, more specifically the Broncos quarterback. He gets it. And so he's given himself a chance to succeed. Expectations for me are high, but they're not. I mean, I've seen people talk like he's going to be in the MVP. That's silly. Like, come on, let's be real here. The guy hasn't started a full season. But I told the guys on the drive the other day, I could see 30 touchdowns, 13, 14 picks, and 32 to 3,500 yards. I could see that. And if this offense is going to do what it's supposed to do, which more deep strikes, more weapons, there's no reason for me he can't approach and be right at 30 touchdown passes with the weapons he has. And that, for me, means they're scoring 23 points a game, and it means they're in the playoffs.
Well, I got to pass some news along to you, guys, because Adam Schefter has just tweeted in the last 4 minutes that the Jets are signing former Super Bowl MVP Joe Flacco to a one-year deal, sources tell ESPN. Jets GM Joe Douglas was a Ravens scout back in 2008 when Baltimore drafted Flacco in the first round. Now Flacco will rejoin Douglas and compete for the backup job when he's healthy and he's ready. It looks like the backups in New York right now, I believe, are David Fales, who's a young kid out of San Jose State. I should say young. He's in his mid to late 20s, I think. And then there's James Morgan, who is a young quarterback from Florida International. So it seems like if Joe Flacco is healthy, he's probably going to be the New York Jets' backup quarterback to Sam Darnold. When I deliver that news, your guys' initial thought is what?
Well, for me, it's good for Joe. Obviously, he's been resigned to knowing that he's going to be a backup quarterback if he wants to keep playing. He's not going to have a chance to compete for a starting job. And it looks like he's open and receptive to that role.
Yeah.
So hopefully he gets healthy. Last I heard of Joe, he was having a neck procedure or going to at some point. Not sure if it happened, didn't happen. But I thought he was going to have some kind of neck operation on you know, whatever he had happened last year. But hopefully all that works out for him and he can go there. I think it's a good signing, though, for the Jets. If you got a guy with, you know, that's played as much football as he's played, to be able to back up a young quarterback like Sam Darnold and to be that sounding board for him, I think, you know, you mentioned the other two guys they have there. I mean, Joe is light years better than those guys.
Right. Troy, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if Joe's healthy, he sets up to be the backup. He was a total pro here in Denver. It just didn't work out. I mean, going the retread route for a starter who's immobile, it just doesn't work in the NFL right now. But as a safety blanket for a guy like Darnold, who's missed time both with illness and injury, you know, to have a guy like Flacco, if he needed to play a couple games to keep you in the playoff hunt, I mean, it makes sense if he's healthy. I got to see that because Joe was not moving well last year.
No.
I'm not being sarcastic about that. Like, even by his standards, he was not moving well. So I'd have to see him healthy, but I wish him nothing but success in that role. I'm sure being on the East Coast played into it, where he's lived essentially outside the Baltimore area for the last 15, 20 years. So I'm sure that played into it as well. But I wish him nothing but success. I just, for the Broncos, it was long overdue for them to go internally with a mobile young quarterback, you know, guys who can't move in this league. There's very few left. Rivers is hanging on by a thread. Yeah. Flacco's a backup. Drew Brees. I mean, and Teddy Bridgewater, I guess, to some degree, but there's not many guys left who don't move around well. Brady, I mean, you're talking the greatest ever, so he's an outlier to this, but there's not many guys left who aren't moving around and mobile.
Yeah, Troy, and I just got to ask you one more follow-up on Flacco. If you could boil it down, and I know you just talked about the immobility, but if you could boil it down, what went so wrong this year for Joe Flacco and the Denver Broncos? You're talking about a guy in eight games who threw six total touchdowns and 5 interceptions and was sacked 26 times. If you could boil it down to like a thesis statement, why was
thesis?
Yeah, wow. It's like it's like the overall arching point that you're going to try to deliver
your
on.
Thesis is now.
if you were going to try to pin it down, what was it?
Yeah, it's the problems of immobility with an ill-suited offense. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, you're talking about a guy who can't move around behind a bad offensive line, especially, you know, on the left side at times, and zero creativity in play calling. I mean, it's just he could still win if it was the Ravens of 02, and it was the early Ravens of just keep it close and win 17-14, and that kind of was the idea when they got Joe, is win 2017-17-14. But once they got behind in games, it was an abject failure because then teams know what they're going to do. They don't do it particularly well, and they can't keep pressure off of him. So, again, it was not a great fit. They needed to do something well, like great defensively to get leads, to allow him to run the ball more and take pressure off that way, or just run the hell out of the ball and then let him take deep strikes once in a while. But Joe Flacco throwing 35 times against when you're trailing, that's not a recipe for success.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.